It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Yesterday was the final regular session for the Wisconsin Assembly this year.
Many contentious issues came up, including some big changes to election law. Passage of all three bills came along partisan lines.
And what happens next? Joining us to discuss the bills is former Wisconsin State Legislator Mordecai Lee, also a professor of governmental affairs for the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Gene.
Well, it's good to have you here. Let's talk a little bit about these various pieces of legislation. I want to start out with the recall measure. This week, Governor Walker said, even he said, that the bill was not needed. So let's talk about two things to start out with. What's recall legislation in the state look like right now? What are the rules regarding that? And what did the proposal that was before the Assembly look like?
Well, as usual in life, things are complicated, and in this case, we have to make a distinction between what's in the state constitution and what's in state laws. And it turns out that one of the last reforms of the La Follette progressives, this is by now sort of like 1923 or so, one of their last progressive reforms was to amend the Wisconsin constitution to permit recalls of state elected officials and county elected officials. What was driving them at the time was that they feared that some politicians would run, for example, for the state legislature as a progressive, and then once they got elected, they would turn into what were then called stalwarts, in other words, sort of pro-business Republicans. So they believed that recall was necessary to keep a short leash on elected officials. And so we've had it ever since in the Constitution, and then in the state law, there's the permission to have recalls for, municipal officials and school officials. So what happened yesterday is the state assembly began the process for amending the Constitution to create conditions under which county and state officials could be recalled, and to apply the same conditions by changing the law, the statutes, for municipal and school board officials.
So amending the Constitution, for those of us who haven't been in our civics class for a long time, tell me how that process works.
Okay, well, it's different from the federal Constitution, so it's even more confusing.
Oh, good.
By the way, there's going to be a test on this at the end of the half hour. The state Constitution, the way the Constitution is amended, is it has to pass one session of the legislature. Then there has to be an election, in other words, an election to elect a new legislature. And then the exact same proposal has to pass the legislature a second time. And if that happens, then it goes to the voters for a referendum. And if it's approved in the referendum, it's enacted. If it's voted down in the referendum, then it doesn't pass.
So it's kind of a long shot, but it's happened before. So, you know, don't count anything out. The new legislation, as it's being proposed, it does set some, I guess, higher bars for recall. And talk about what those are. And maybe if you could, I don't know if you want to speculate on where they came from.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Heck, I've got tenure, so I can speculate. No, I think we have to make very clear what the situation is, that right now in Wisconsin, a governor, state legislators, can be subject to recall for any reason or even no reason. And, I think when we look back on what happened after Act 10, some Wisconsinites will say, well, there was a really good reason to do it, and other Wisconsinites will say, well, there was absolutely no good reason to do it. What the proposal is it's trying to find a middle ground between no reason and some specific reasons. We have to remember that in Wisconsin, if an elected official is ever convicted of a felony, they automatically lose office. There's no process involved. There's no recall involved. You get convicted of a felony, you're out. So when you think about it, what the authors of this constitutional amendment tried to do is they tried to find reasons to limit recalls, and the reasons they came up with were either a violation of the ethics code, which is not a felony, or being accused of a crime but not necessarily convicted of a crime. Now, it seems to me, this is where I'm shifting from fact to speculation, it seems to me that this is a kind of a de facto banning of recalls. That there would be so few situations where somebody would be accused of an ethics violation that was not a felony, or be accused of something but not be convicted of it. In other words, you could not have recalls for policy reasons. Now, I've been on this show before, and I've said philosophically I am against recalls, but this strikes me as indirect. It doesn't say we're abolishing recalls, but in a de facto sense, I'd argue they are abolishing recalls.
given what happened in the last round of recalls and sort of the tone of everything, if this winds up continuing down the path to changing the state constitution, how do you think it'll be received by voters? What do you think the public thinks about this, or is this something that's just sort of inside baseball?
No, I think people will have views on it. You're right that sometimes constitutional amendments come up and, you know, people sort of shrug and, you know, say, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you'll find most Wisconsinites understanding what recall is because of the events that happened after Act 10. And if I had to absolutely bet a nickel, I'd bet that it's going to be voted down in the sense that voters don't like to be limited, even if I would philosophically argue that we ought to abolish recalls totally for any reason. But still, I think there'll be a kind of a conservative attitude of we want to keep this nuclear option and we don't want politicians limiting our options.
But we've got a ways to go before we see what that vote from the populace looks like.
Right, a long ways to go. We have many more programs to talk about.
Well, that's good news. Another thing we'd like to talk about is the voter ID proposal that came before the Assembly. And we should point out that there's already other voter ID legislation out there that is being challenged. And so why do we have all this voter ID stuff around, and what's the fate of the one that passed last night going to look like?
Well, once again, Gene, we're in a situation that's very complicated. I think the short version would be that while it's being litigated in the federal courts, if it's constitutional to require photo ID, and if I recall, federal courts approved it for Indiana, although I hope if somebody knows I'm wrong, I hope they'll call in. But this was an attempt by some legislators in the majority party, the Republican Party, to say, hey, maybe because of that lawsuit, the whole law will be vulnerable. And if one of the major criticisms of the law that's being tried in court is the issue of free ID cards versus engaging in a cost to obtain a photo ID, why don't we repass the law that says that you don't have to have a photo ID if you declare that you're indigent and you're unable to get a photo ID? So in a sense, this is trying to take care of a problem in case that problem is the fatal one for the law, depending on how the courts rule.
It's interesting, though, the Assembly passed this legislation, but Scott Fitzgerald says over in the Senate he doesn't have a lot of interest in taking this up just yet.
Yeah, I think this is healthy for us to see in the sense of that for those of us who think of political parties as sort of lockstep military units that they take their marching orders and they do exactly what they're told, here's a wonderful example that the Republican Party is heterogeneous, that its leadership in the state legislature has different opinions about what is the correct way to proceed to deal with the problem. And so you've got a majority leader in the state Senate who is taking a different view. He's saying, we don't know if this is going to be fatal, and it could be that the court decision will be about something else or would even make this attempted repair fatal. So let's just wait and see what the courts decide. Probably what's pressing here is a desire by some people in the majority party to get this taken care of before the November election, a year from now, before the election for governor. I think it's understandable. They want to have their rules in place by then, but I'm not sure if they're going to make it. Senator Fitzgerald strikes me as the kind of guy that when he has an opinion, he sticks with it, although, of course, this is all subject to compromise and negotiation.
We've got more legislation to get to, but first a phone call. Let's start with Jake from Milwaukee. Hi, Jake.
Hi, yeah. You know, if you look at the long-term effects of what they're trying to do, you can really easily see that they're trying to insulate themselves from public effects from what they have passed in legislation. I mean, for instance, you know, if they pass, you know, they keep on going against local power up in the Sandmine area. They want to take away local power. And I'm sure there was a lot of supporters up there of them. But now that if they can insulate themselves via voting or other stuff, they'll be able to do what they want for the corporations who seem to write all the legislation in their state and not have to face the full effects of the voters. And that goes through the entire, that starts with gerrymandering and everything down the line. So what they're really doing, in my point of view, is they're trying to stop people from voting them out of power.
Jake, thanks so much for the call. Mordecai Lee. But they're the majority party. Isn't that what the majority party is supposed to do, try to protect themselves?
You were paying attention in high school civics class.
A little bit.
No, I think Jake has really gotten to the heart of the issue. You know, it's so hard to talk about these kinds of topics without being partisan, without sounding like a Democrat or Republican. But I like Jake's comment in the sense that he's pointing out a weakness of American democracy, of the American form of government, and that's that the players, when they're winning, get to set the rules. And so when you're the majority party, you can not only pass whatever policy you like, but you can pass the rules of the game that you like. You know, it's sort of like the Packers get to set NFL rules for all the home games, but the away games, the rules are set by their hosts. And this probably strikes most voters, if they think about it, as sort of not quite right, that there's a certain self-interest going on. And so that's why we see various efforts to say, for example, that reapportionment should be done on a nonpartisan basis, or even pension decisions and salary decisions for legislators should be set by an independent body. And I think this is difficult. This is hard to resolve. It's a real Gordian knot.
We're going to take a break right now. We're speaking with former Wisconsin legislator Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs for the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And we're talking about the election-related bills that passed the state assembly.
We'll come back after the break and continue the discussion with Professor Lee. And we'd like to know what you think about these bills, too. We'll be taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us questions or comment on our Facebook page.
I'm Gene Purcell with Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time. We're talking about the state assembly bills about voting and elections that passed yesterday, and we'd like to know what you think about them, too. You can ask questions of our guest or give us your opinion by giving us a call at 800-642-1234. And you can email us at talk@WPR.org or leave a comment on our Facebook page. Mordecai Lee is with us. He is a former Wisconsin state legislator, and he is currently a professor of governmental affairs for the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Before we get back to phone calls, Mordecai Lee, I'd like to ask about the legislation on absentee voting, because as I understand it, it takes some control away from local municipalities or counties where they might have a different absentee voting rule in place.
You're right, Gene, and this is probably going to be the hottest issue as we get closer to the next elections, that generally speaking, Democrats like early voting, and generally speaking, Republicans don't like early voting. And so we're seeing these sort of partisan sort of shoulder bumping, trying to get to their advantage. Democrats want maximum early voting, and Republicans want minimum. The version of the bill that passed yesterday, if I understand it correctly, gave city clerks two options. They can either be open long hours on weekdays the week before the election, or they can be open during a weekend. They can't do both. And I suspect it's going to be really hard to talk about this from a nonpartisan perspective, because this is similar to our earlier conversation, that this is one party getting to set the rules of the game that affects future outcomes. But I could sound nonpartisan by saying that I'm sort of an old-fashioned idealist, that I believe in making it as easy as possible to vote, that I don't think that voting is similar to, I don't know, going to the dry cleaners. It's not a commercial transaction. It's not like going through TSA at an airport, that we would want democracy to have maximum participation. In fact, in Australia, I think there's you get fined a small amount if you don't vote. I'd like to see that, and I think with the changes in technology, it's inevitable that within a generation we'll be able to vote online, we'll be able to vote early, we'll have all kinds of new options of how to vote. So this might be trying to hold back the tide for sort of one last partisan advantage, but I suspect that early voting has become very deeply embedded in the American civic culture.
And what's the fate of this going to look like? How's the Senate going to receive this one?
Well, I don't know. I didn't see any comment by Majority Leader Fitzgerald of the Senate on this one. I suspect that it'll probably pass the Senate, and I suspect that Governor Walker would probably sign it, although it wouldn't probably not be much hoopla around signing it. But, if we say about the Packers, let's say, that the only thing that counts is winning, then that also is true about politics. The only thing that counts is winning. And if redrawing the boundary lines of a voting district or if changing the voting hours or changing voting requirements helps you win, then the only thing that counts is winning. And that, I guess, is sort of the mantra of our generation, which I think it's a shame. I'd really wish we could separate the right to vote from all the partisan ideologies.
Let's go back to the phones right now. We've got some listeners who would like to join in, and Jim is with us from New Berlin. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I agree with Mordecai's recent statements. I thought some of the early ones, not so much. But the idea is that he was talking about it earlier, like there's no right in this issue. And a moral right is making it easier for people to vote. The Constitution and Supreme Court rulings for the last 100 years have made it easier for people to vote. Why is this just a political question? Why isn't it a moral question?
Well, Jim has sort of really tried to redefine the issue, and I like that because for our generation, the Civil Rights Voting Act of 1965 was the ultimate moral legislation. It was the one that said that African Americans and other minority groups could be protected by a proactive federal involvement so that they had the right to vote and that there weren't seemingly neutral hazards and obstacles put in front of them. But I think at the same time, maybe that was the last moral issue about voting rights. Maybe even when we look at how the Democrats were in favor of what's called motor voter registration or Democrats were in favor of reducing the voting age to 18, they did package it as a moral issue. But I think it also was to their partisan advantage because young people tended to break and skew Democratic. So it's hard to separate partisan advantage when coming to these issues nowadays.
Is there something unique about this time that we're living in that led to this legislation, do you think? I mean, is this type of legislation something that could have happened at another point in our history?
Boy, that's a wonderful question, Gene. And off the cuff, I'd say this reflects our era, and it would not necessarily have happened in earlier eras, that in our era, the partisan gridlock, the partisan hatred, you can justify the means for the ends. There's nothing you can't do. Winning is everything. I guess this is part and parcel of that package, the sort of gestalt of our time, unfortunately.
We've got a whole bunch of elections coming up about a year from now in 2014. And of course, the big race for governor here, a whole wave of legislative elections and so forth. Are these election issues that we're talking about today going to play a big role in how we vote a year from now? Or do you think the election is going to turn into more of a referendum on other things, you know, jobs, for example?
Well, what I'd point to is that when Governor Walker won his recall, there were some very interesting survey research results that showed that some people voted for him because they agreed with Act 10 and they were generally Republican and conservative voters, but that there was a layer of voters, I think it was about 5 or 7%, who said that, well, they didn't necessarily agree with Act 10, but at the same time, they disagreed with recalling him, that it wasn't justified to recall him because of Act 10. I think those are the voters who are going to influence the results of the 2014 election because, in a sense, they'll be freed from how they handcuffed themselves. They'll be freed from saying Act 10 didn't justify a recall. And so I think that we're going to be seeing a lot of election results that will reflect the kinds of arguments and the kinds of issues that we are talking about today. So, Gene, I do think you're onto something.
Well, Mordecai Lee, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Gene.
We appreciate it. Mordecai Lee has been with us. He is a professor of governmental affairs for the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.